Welcome to the CLS Experience. I'm your host, Craig Siegel. I'm a born and raised New Yorker who achieved success with multiple businesses, but I crave something deeper. So I dedicated myself to personal growth and transformation by revamping my mindset. I went from being unable to run a mile to conquering four marathons the following year. Now, I want to help others manufacture big breakthroughs of their own.
Awareness, and I think that goes hand in hand with the superpower that I acknowledge, understanding. That's the first step. I will always break down a transformational journey into two really simple steps, which is becoming really present, aware, conscious of what are those patterns that are creating our life. We're also kind of dropped into that autopilot. I think I like to describe us as the horse with blinders on it, right? We're blind to ourselves in so many ways. And until we really see what for many of us are cycles of learning that we have been passed through generations that are, again, operating outside of our awareness, we actually can't make that next step, which is begin to create daily new choices. I mean, as simple as that sounds, right? To change, we have to actually begin at some point to do things differently.
On today's episode of the CLS Experience, we have a very exclusive treat. She's a number one New York Times bestselling author and trailblazer, no big deal. Trained at prestigious institutions like Cornell University and the New School for Social Research, she's not just a clinical psychologist, but a visionary who's redefining the boundaries of traditional psychotherapy, big facts. Recognizing the limitations of conventional methods, she embarked on a transformative journey to develop a unified philosophy that bridges mental, physical, and spiritual health, which I deeply admire. Her revolutionary approach equips people with the tools to heal themselves, breaking free from trauma cycles, and crafting their own narratives for an abundant future. Beyond her clinical practice, she's a beacon of hope, guiding individuals to transcend their past and shape their future. She's a force of nature, a beacon of enlightenment, and a true embodiment of holistic healing. She's just a juggernaut in all facets of life and an extraordinary human being. Please welcome the holistic psychologist, the insightful, transformative, radiant, and abundant, the beautiful and authentic Dr. Nicole Lapera. How are you doing, Dr. Nicole?
Oh, Craig, I'm smiling from ear to ear. I have chills. Thank you for that very, very kind introduction. I am excited to have this conversation and super honored to be here and to connect with your community.
Likewise. I did good by you with the intro. You feeling nice and elevated?
Oh, my gosh. I literally have chills. I still have them. I'm resonating.
I love it. A fellow East Coaster, even though that's not where you're at now, but there's always a little bit of a different swag or a little bit of a different vibe when I get together with my fellow East Coasters. For our audience who might not be familiar, my best suggestion is to do a deep dive, play catch up, grab her books, check out all her unbelievable content. What I think is most valuable today is we just dive in and have an unbelievable conversation. Before we dive in, we're going to get a little weird. You ready for me?
Let's do it.
What is your superpower, Dr. Nicole?
Oh, my superpower. My superpower, I think, is understanding. The desire, first and foremost, to understand, I think, as all things, beginning with myself, and to give now the tools for each of us to understand each other. Though saying that to say, there was a time in my life where I don't think understanding, I would have described it as a superpower. I leaned into understanding oftentimes to my own disservice, and that was very much emblematic of my own healing journey, learning how to now stand in my understanding, understand others, but of course to continue to create a space for me.
A space for me, that's really deep. What do you mean by that exactly?
Yeah, I'd come to, for me, which was a list of lifelong achievements, right? All of this to-do list, things I wanted to get done, to speak to your very beautiful introduction. I checked a lot of boxes. I went to schooling, got my PhD. I had a successful practice. I had made the decision to live in my hometown, which was Philadelphia at the time. I was in a successful relationship and I was feeling really deeply unfulfilled and really deeply disconnected from the life that I created around me and that I was, you know, trudging to day in, day out. And I felt very shameful at first, especially working with people who, right, I had known had really big, difficult things that they had experienced in their life. And I was really minimizing a lot of my own past experience and really came to understand that I didn't have space for myself. I learned very early on in childhood to water down my perspectives, my opinions, to disconnect from my emotions. I didn't have the tools to navigate my own emotional experiences. And namely in my relationships, I think I became very commonly, right, the people pleaser in service of someone else.
Same.
You're raising your hand. I think a lot of us, you know, resonate with that. So saying that to say, I didn't have much space for myself in my world. And when I understood my childhood dynamics and why I had created those habits, and then obviously began to shift and change those, focusing on my body, focusing on my mind, the beautiful mindset work that I know you guys talk a lot about here within your community, I began to finally create space for me. And in doing so, I really transformed myself in so many ways. My relationship with anxiety, which was lifelong, my relationship with myself, my relationship in my relationships, which has now allowed me to, as we were talking a bit behind the scenes, work and embody a new aspect of who I really am.
This is so good. And one of the many reasons why I think this is so special is because this particular topic is not niche. It's applicable for everybody in some capacity. And a word that comes to mind, and I know you love this word too, is awareness, right? First, we have to have the awareness that maybe there's some patterns here that don't suit us, or we're not being authentic, or we're not creating space for us, right?
Yeah, awareness. And I think that goes hand in hand with the superpower that I acknowledge, understanding. That's the first step. I will always break down a transformational journey into two really simple steps, which is becoming really present, aware, conscious of what are those patterns that are creating our life. We're also kind of dropped into that autopilot. I think I like to describe us as the horse with blinders on it, right? We're blind to ourselves in so many ways. And until we really see what for many of us are cycles of learning that we have been passed through generations that are, again, operating outside of our awareness, we actually can't make that next step, which is begin to create daily new choices. I mean, as simple as that sounds, right, to change, we have to actually begin at some point to do things differently.
So we did a thing and launched our first book, The Reinvention Formula, and became a Wall Street Journal bestseller in the first week of launch. The feedback is off the charts, and this book has 41 bite-sized chapters on everything to help you gain clarity, cultivate self-belief, unlock a bulletproof mindset, branding, entrepreneurship, mindset, falling in love, self-care, and everything in between. It's the number one vessel for all of your human development in one place, and it was published by the iconic Wiley Publishing, hitting number 4 for Wall Street Journal and becoming a USA Today bestseller as well. No big deal. It's very digestible. I had no ghostwriter, and it's jam-packed with juicy nuggets that will ignite that fire within. Head to Barnes & Noble, Amazon, and any way you buy books, snatch your copy today and activate your expansion. Juicy nuggets, you dig?
And again, without that understanding, remaining blinded to ourselves, as I was for a very long time, we're never going to be able to actualize into creating the change. And what a lot of us end up doing then is feeling really shameful of ourselves and our circumstances. So a big part of my work, I hope, in this kind of concept of understanding or consciousness or awareness, is to empower us to understand that the reason our life might look however it currently looks is of no fault or deficiency of our own. It is actually the byproduct of our learning or of our earliest environment, so that then we can empower ourselves to not only think about, but actually create the future that we want.
This is unbelievable. A couple of things that come to mind right there is I was going 100 miles, actually probably 400 miles an hour as owner on Wall Street. And, you know, if you're not going that speed, you get run over. And the pandemic was that global awakening. But for me, it was that historic opportunity to just reassess. I had known I've been miserable for quite some time, but I didn't take the time to create the space to kind of get clarity and figure out, what do I actually want to do? What do I love? Why am I here? And when I finally got quiet in the pandemic, so essentially I had no choice. Like, it was always a choice, right? I could have binge watched Tiger King like most people and drank a bottle of wine a day, but I chose to be productive. And that mindfulness was a portal to expansion for me, because I was finally available to receive those downloads. And then I realized that I had a choice. We all have a choice. And you have to be able to, now I know that taking a step back and kind of tapping into your feminine energy is a great way to quantum leap forward. But if you're always just go, 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 masculine, that's counterproductive. So now I know that I can intentionally do it moving forward. And I think that's key for anybody to kind of just reassess and take a second, right?
Yeah, I really appreciate you so readily sharing that period of, you know, not knowing. Because I think especially as, you know, we enter into adulthood and we have, again, an identity wrapped around this current way that we've been living, been working, maybe even have created a family. I think it is really a difficult acknowledgement for a lot of us to allow ourselves to be like, you know what? I did things in this way, but the reality of it is I don't really know what I deeply want. I don't know what my actual purpose and passion are. And then even more courageous, once I begin to create the space to get curious and then explore what it is that might be, you know, kind of deeper than what I've been doing on the surface, then it is a really courageous act to make those new choices. Because I often talk about the body and the role that our nervous system in particular plays. And while we are incredibly creative, expanding, evolving, energetic creatures, the reality physiologically, at least to our nervous system, is while it can change, it doesn't prefer to. It prefers the comfort, the sense of control, and the sense of safety and the security that it's gotten for many of us into adulthood, validated for decades, right? Even if the consequences that happen next are not the ones we want, we can predict that that's what happens next. And so making those new choices really is a challenge to our body and to our nervous system, which is why I think, especially just to touch upon in the mindset field, why a lot of us might have heard, you know, affirm your way or, you know, think new thoughts and, you know, create the life you want. Of course, that's part of the journey of creating a new outcome. Though the other part, at least in my opinion, is to get our body on board, to understand first and foremost why we struggle to change, to relieve that shameful aspect, whatever story we've created, that's not worth, or I'm not worth this future that I want. Not that at all. My nervous system, right, is protecting me in these particular patterns. And then of course we can begin to empower ourselves to create that change. Understanding the resistance, shifting my body will then allow over time those affirmations to become much more powerful.
Yeah. I love how you break it down into a process, into a system. And for me, it's like I was in such a dark season for a bunch of different reasons that when I finally created the space to get quiet and started to get clarity on why I'm here, what my purpose could be, what my assignment might be, people always ask me, like, weren't you scared to leave a stable job and reinvent yourself and step into this? And just to be clear, at the time, I had no following, no connections, no celebrity friends, none of that. But for me, I made it so real for myself that I began to associate death with choosing to go back and be miserable, because quite frankly, I didn't even feel like I was alive. I was existing. And you articulated beautifully. It was like surface level stuff. I was like following in the footsteps of other people's expectations, but I don't even know whose expectations. I kind of created this persona of how I thought I was supposed to show up in the world. To be honest with you, I never even articulated it out loud. So thank you for that breakthrough.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, I think a lot of it comes from, you know, and I could just touch on my experience.
Please.
From a very well-intentioned, you know, kind of my parents, from a very well-intentioned place, especially when we talk about the work we do, which for a lot of us is a huge aspect, if not the entirety of our identity, from a very well-intentioned space, you know, having older parents that are very much post-depression era with a lot of financial security in their own past. I mean, I was religiously taught, right? Go to work for someone else, get the consistent paycheck, of course, schooling and upper education. When I started to talk about, oh, I'm interested in people, I might want to be a psychologist. And with that comes a PhD, how prestigious, right? I was shoveled into all of the opportunities, which I'm very grateful for, of course, but, you know, kind of continuing myself pushing along this path, which from my parents' perspective was my way to creating, or the way that they saw for me to creating the financial security that they very much wanted for me. And again, so continuing on that journey, then I felt, as I think a lot of us do, I felt really shameful, you know, because a lot of the things, especially obtaining high degrees and, right, having a successful practice, from the outside looking in, right, we can very easily think, well, I should be happy. I shouldn't feel unfulfilled. I should be grateful for the opportunities and for what it is that, you know, I have created. When the reality of it for me, I came to understand, was that that kind of pushing and driving was one of the main ways that I learned to value myself, and that there was so much more beneath the surface. I mean, even hearing myself cite things like passion and purpose when I was locked in that survival mode of, you know, existing, not tending to my physical needs, suppressing all of my emotional experiences, like not having the space for me, like I was describing earlier, the byproduct of that is not only, I just want to speak to this idea of safety and stillness. Yes. Not only could I hit pause, I was too going a million miles an hour, living in New York City, had an active social life, always had something to do, right? As a protection, because stopping did not feel safe to my body, let alone being curious and entertaining things like purpose, passion. They're not on my nervous system docket when my body is driven to survive the stress of that moment. So again, I just continue to emphasize how much for me, and I think for many of us, so much of our journey, all of these habits are wired into our physiology, and really do make it difficult. And then we become, right, these identities, whether or not it's the job we do, for some others, it's the role we play in our relationships, right? I'm the caretaker of others. And then that becomes who we think we are. Only to come to realize again, like we were just touching on a bit earlier, that there's so much more to our experience that we might be suppressing beneath the surface.
So interesting. And when you talk about identity, it's like, I don't know about you, but for me, like, you begin to think that you'll be validated once you get the thing, or once your identity accumulates what it is that you think that you're after, right? And the irony is that we think that might activate a lit soul. And what I learned in the last couple of years since I got into alignment, is that the irony is you activate a lit soul now, and then you end up manifesting the things that you thought you needed to accomplish that.
Yeah. And my new book, How to Be the Love You Seek, really talks a lot about all of the habitual ways that many of us have tried to gain, in particular, a sense of worthiness. Because the reality for the large majority of us, at least as adults, being raised by parents who were limited in the information that they were given, many of which who were limited in the resources, financial, emotional, and everything in between, right? Many of us were limited again by what we were taught in childhood. And the reality of it is that while we had very well-meaning parents, some of us at least, right? were not equipped to as consistently and as safely and securely show up in service of our needs being met, whether it was physical, those of us who were physically neglected or abused, or emotional. And this was the case that I fell into. I didn't have those, I think, more traditional moments to be like, oh, something quote unquote bad happened. In reality, for me, it was what didn't happen. Not having that emotionally attuned caregiver, that safety and the security, growing up in a very high stressful environment, living in a city where there was external stress within the home, there was a lot of physical or health related stress, and not having support, my core emotional needs weren't met. And just tying this into this concept of seeking in childhood, especially between birth and age 7, when we don't have the developmental maturity that we do as adults, you and I are able to zoom out, right? See all these different nuances and factors and things that impact someone else's decisions. We're in what's called an egocentric state, which means, if we want to simplify it, the world revolves around us. Our caregiver's presence or lack thereof is a marker of our sense of worthiness. So when someone doesn't show up to care for us as consistently as we need it, the meaning-making part of our brain, which we still have in childhood, will land on we're part of the reason. There's something inherently unworthy about us that's contributing to this person who's not meeting my needs in whatever way that it is. So then, to compensate, we begin to contort ourselves, right? To suppress the things that aren't being validated, or to only express, and this was in my case, the things that were being validated, right? This endless drive for achievement, and to just keep ourselves so focused on maintaining whatever version of connection was available, even though it was very limited for many of us, because we needed those caregivers to continue to show up in whatever way that they were capable. Meanwhile, in our mind, we're creating this very deep-rooted belief that we are only worthy when we continue to show up in this particular way, whether it's achieving all of these different things externally, or whether it's, again, playing these particular roles in our relationship. Because again, in our core, we do feel very empty, and we do try to fill that hole, that feeling, which is why it never ends up feeling good, right? We end up just feeling usually exhausted and still unfulfilled in a deep level.
It's so impressive and really contagious how jazzed you are about your work. It's just a beautiful thing. You can't buy that. Like, your soul is lit. It's very obvious. And let's dive all into the book. Correct me if I'm wrong, this is the third one in the trilogy?
This is the third one. It's wild for me to say. I would have never talked about limited thinking. I would have never thought myself imagined books possible in my future. My first book was How to Do the Work, really focused on this, even this entire conversation we've been having, all of these habits and patterns beneath the surface, hoping to empower readers. The second book was a workbook, really diving into the nitty gritty, the daily experience of meeting yourself, your soul. I love that you're even using this language, right? Who am I really? Peeling, beginning to have those daily tools to peel back all the layers of who I'm not, so that then I can meet who I am. And then intuitively, yes, the next topic that is top of hand in my own self, in my own life. And I think for many of us who are on this transformational journey is in our relationships. So this third book is really focusing on understanding our relationships, these core dynamics that we learned in childhood, and of course, giving the tools to begin to create change.
You may have heard we have the fastest growing, dynamic, supportive, and strategy rich community in the space called the CLS Membership. We meet three Wednesdays a month virtually on different topics such as entrepreneurship, branding, money stories, building relationships, mindset, and a whole lot more. We have a private group where members collaborate and network, and we are joined by massive guest speakers who have personally hit me up on the side saying they have never felt an energy like the one we have inside our community. It's special and exclusive. If you're listening to this podcast, you're clearly a growth-minded, expansive cat. If you'd like to learn more, head to our website and check out the CLS membership. And also, get a little excited, you dig? Yeah, this is unbelievable. To be honest with you, this is the stuff that I would like to see, and I like to help out being taught, like when we're younger, like in school and stuff. And, you know, I talk about this often, like I wasn't the best student. I got by with the college, all that stuff, but I wasn't really that interested in the curriculum. But also I must take full accountability. I was a little lazy, like back then I wasn't so interested, but I do believe if the material was more like relevant or helpful in everyday life, as opposed to just algebra, maybe it was relationships, entrepreneurship, cool stuff like that, I probably would have been more invested. But this is really the life skills that we need, like relationships and love and all that stuff. Would you agree with that?
100%. I think, you know, in school as just a macro topic, I think trying to fit students or us as individuals, right, into one definition, quite universal definition of intelligence, and then all of the curriculum that goes along with that is just not, it's not possible. It's really limiting a lot of other different types of intelligence and self-expression and interests that children could be pursuing. And I think education, in addition to our family home environments, right, are impacted not only by having the right curriculum for the education, you know, discussion, or having the right parenting book for the parenting discussion. That's part of it, saying, right, the right things, teaching the right things. So much more impactful is the human who's doing it, right? Do you have an attuned, right, teacher or caregiver who themselves has those life skills? So who's not just saying, you know, or teaching what it is that they were tasked to say or to teach, though that's embodying the safety and the security that developing minds need to even explore their curiosity or to share, you know, kind of what's really going on with them emotionally. And again, so I think that's where these positions, parents very much included, are just so incredibly impactful. And like I kind of offered earlier, are very still, in my opinion, under-resourced, because again, we are still individuals trying, many of us, our best, that are going to be limited. If we're not feeling safe and secure and connected and curious and lit up and our soul on fire about what we're doing, then we're not really going to be able to embody that feeling when we're teaching or when we're parenting. And that is, again, going to be the most impactful experience, because yes, a child is listening to what's being said or what's being taught, though their body is doing much more of the experiencing and the learning in that moment.
Yeah, I agree. Beautifully said. How can somebody, and I know you talk about this in the book, How could somebody develop emotional resilience?
Yeah. And I love this question and to think about this. And I'll be the first to admit, I'm still teaching my own body how to tolerate emotional resilience. Really is the ability to tolerate stress and other dysregulating or upsetting emotions. And again, going back to a theme I keep bringing up, very few of us as adults actually have that capacity. We weren't taught. We didn't have that safe and secure nervous system, that grounded point of co-regulation that our developing nervous system actually physiologically needed in our childhood to expand our own window of tolerance, to have stressful things happen and to have that secure home base to regulate or to co-regulate with a safe caregiver our own upset or dysregulated nervous system response. So the first step in me first acknowledging that, you know, I'm still developing that ability myself is to see all of those reactive moments, the explosive moments where we're screaming and yelling, the distracted moments where we're scrolling or maybe endlessly achieving, to disconnect or distract myself, keep myself distanced from my emotions. For me, I lived decades of my life very much going about my life, but living on it, what I call a spaceship, completely disconnected from my physical experience, understanding that all of those things I just described are not who we are intrinsically, are actually a reaction, the way our nervous system has learned to protect ourselves from upsetting, overwhelming emotions. And once we have, again, just going back to those two steps, that awareness, oh, that's what's happening when I'm exploding or when I'm keeping myself endlessly distracted by a to-do list or when I'm going about the motions, but I don't really feel connected. Oh, my nervous system is doing what it learned. So I'm feeling unsafe in this moment. Now I can begin to make much more conscious choices of how to regulate my body in a new way, of how to deal with little by little more and more stress before I become eruptive, before I become distracted, before I become shut down. And actually through intentional practices of belly breathing, of grounding my attention in the present moment, of, you know, actually calming my nervous system down. It's again, a physiological practice of creating small amounts of stress and learning or teaching my body how to come back into that regulated state.
When you describe the spaceship analogy, that was awesome. So beautiful. I think of like, we're a soul and a spirit having a human experience, and we forget that energetically we could tap into all the stuff, and we're just kind of living in this 3D 1% reality. And we think that that's where it's capped. Is that kind of what you mean?
I actually start one of my chapters in How to Be the Love You Seek with talking about the soul and actually talking about, Craig, how there was a time in my past where I would have read about people who have this soul connection and, you know, are very soulful, yeah. And I wouldn't have criticized them necessarily, but I would have that's not me. Didn't have the language. I didn't have the connection to my own self in that way. And again, it took me peeling back all of the actions that I was taking that were coming from all of these other conditioned places to create safety in those moments of stillness, like I was describing earlier, so that I could actually begin to attune to that deeper sense of self. And for me, I love science. I love actually understanding, especially when it's a concept that's so elusive, like soul, what the heck is that? And for me, a big door opened when I began to learn the quantum world and about energy and the fact that when it really comes down to, right, I needed that language to say, oh, now I can understand what, again, my scientific, if you will, definition of soul is. It's my unique vibrational energy that is expressed right through this very physical body that I'm living in, through this mental world of my perspectives and thoughts that, again, I'd been suppressing for so long, though it actually does map onto my energy interacting with the world around me. So for me, that was mind-blowing and really transformational, because now I not only had language, which was part of it, I had understanding, okay, this elusive thing exists. It exists outside my conditioning, though then I had the tools to, like I was sharing, begin to create space, stillness, to get curious, to begin to even entertain and explore what my perspectives are so that I can get more and more in touch with my actual expression of my soul.
There's so much alignment here. It's freaky. And for me, this happened a couple of years ago. I was such a mindset guy through and through, like vibrations, energy, were you nuts? If I couldn't, like, it wasn't part of my senses, I couldn't fathom it. And then something happened a couple of years ago since I reinvented myself, and I just leaned in and I put my ego aside and I just surrendered. And that's when I went down the rabbit hole with the quant and the energy. And I reread The Secret at a season of life when I was more available for it. And a lot of those authors now my friends and so forth. And I never left the quantum since. And it's just so beautiful. And I'm just curious, based upon what you were just saying, when was that for you? How long ago in your journey did you start to buy into all this stuff and had that big transformation?
I think many people, you know, met these topics probably in my early 20s, and it didn't resonate. I very much understood what I think a lot of the criticism is around, you know, kind of manifestation work. And this idea, I think the criticism often being of like, right, spiritual bypassing or emotional bypassing, right? Just thinking your way to whatever it is that you want in your life. So I didn't necessarily criticize it, but it didn't resonate with my experience. And it took until, as I talk about in How to Do the Work, I was kind of at that end of my lifelong achievements. I was feeling really unfulfilled, and I was in what I now understand to be a dark night of the soul, right? All of this way of being left me feeling so empty, so depleted, so disconnected. And it led me actually to begin to manifest some physical symptoms of nervous system dysregulation that I'd had for my lifetime that for me looked like fainting. And that scared me enough, coming from a family with a lot of health related issues and concerns. Of course, my immediate thought was, oh my gosh, something's wrong in my brain. So of course I did what many of us do. I went online to self-diagnose what could be wrong in my brain when you start to lose consciousness out of nowhere. It never happened before. And the gift in that was, because I'm a researcher, and before I went to the actual doctor, I wanted to have an idea of what I might, you know, be hearing on the other end. And I met this whole world of science, of the body, of epigenetics, of the nervous system, that began to give me a new understanding of my symptoms and what was going on, which then led me down the rabbit hole of these energetics. And so I say that to say, I do believe, you know, that when you think about manifestation, if you're not including your body and all of those ingrained beliefs and, you know, states of nervous system dysregulation, that I understand when people are like, it doesn't work, because in my opinion, it won't work unless, again, you include the body and teach yourself how to be more stress resilient and how to find safety and stillness so that you can even begin to entertain things like purpose and passion and not just be locked in that survival mode. So it wasn't necessarily a kind of cataclysmic moment. It was an accumulation of moments that led me down to one rabbit hole after the other. Then again, of course, I began to apply what I was learning to myself, that then opened up this information, this wisdom, and really this transformation in my own life.
Yeah, it's wisdom, transformation, beautifully said. So many places we could take this. The book is unbelievable. And you know, another topic you talk about is how to reconnect to your true authentic self. And it's interesting because I feel like I was inauthentic for 35 years. And then I finally got the clarity, and I was kind of a gladiator in the wrong arena. And I put it all together. And people think what we've done has been an overnight success, but I've been working on myself for 15 years. I just got into alignment. And I made one guarantee when I was going to step into this, because there was no guarantee that it would work per se. But I said, for the first time in my life, I'm going to show up as the weird, strange, authentic, real, raw cat that I am. I understand it's not going to be for everybody, but the right people will gravitate. The wrong people will beat it, so to speak. But if, God forbid, I failed, at least I failed being myself for the first time. And ironically, once I leaned in, that's when the world began to see me, and I never looked back. And I don't know, you use the word reconnect to your true authentic self. What if someone's listening right now and they're like, they've been a people pleaser for so long, they don't even know. They don't know if they ever connected to their authentic self. Is that the same thing?
Nutrition Solutions offers the best healthy meal prep options for health, wellness, weight loss, and improved performance. The customer service and support at Nutrition Solutions is unbelievable and second to none. And when I travel for my marathons, the meals are waiting at my hotel. I don't even have to break a sweat. Even their protein donuts and breakfast items are made with fresh, organic ingredients. I love Nutrition Solutions' reliability, quality, and all-around lifestyle that they represent, which is world-class. To get both physically and mentally fit, go to NutritionSolutions.com and use promo code CLS25. Thank me later, you dig?
I think that, again, is a beautiful awareness to celebrate and to make space for that, right? I have been playing this role, pleasing others, caretaking others, you know, always worrying about maybe what other people think. I think that's another version of people pleasing, right? Well, what do you think of me? What do you think I should do? What will the neighbors think is usually where that was born in childhood. I think that's a beautiful, right, awareness to begin with. And then the courage to begin to break those habits. That's where the change happens first. Again, it's not, I loved how you kind of acknowledge, it's not an overnight success when we're talking about the external success, and the journey of change and healing is definitely not overnight. When we come to the awareness that, oh my gosh, I'm playing this role and I don't know who I am, it's so natural to want to just have the one tool to find out who I am. Okay, well, how do I know who I am and what I really want? And unfortunately, it is first breaking all of those daily moments where you're saying yes when you mean no, when you're more focused on what someone else is thinking of you before you're dropping in and thinking about yourself and what it is that you think or how you're feeling or what you need in the moment. And as you begin to string together more consistent moments of that self-focus, that self-exploration, and then even more bravely, that self-expression outward, because a byproduct, I love how, you know, courageous you are. I'm going to be myself. And not only will I be more aligned and therefore attract more alignment, I'll just speak from my own journey. What a byproduct, a natural byproduct of that is I will also open myself up for other people's interpretations, misinterpretations, right? Misunderstandings, people seeing me through their lens of projection and not actually seeing me at all. And so with this very courageous journey of peeling back the layers of people pleasing to explore who I am and then express who I am, another skill that I know I still have to learn sometimes on the daily is how to tolerate those moments of misunderstanding, of misinterpretation, of someone seeing who I am and me not being for them for whatever reason. How do I stand in that discomfort? And especially just speaking as a fellow people pleaser, that is still one of the greatest difficulties for me to do, is to hold and receive someone else's opinion when it isn't favorable, because there's a very core part of me that wants to be liked, that wants to just, you know, be the person who everyone gets along with. And in moments where that's not the case, how can I still stand and keep my authenticity intact? Right? Not just defer to what people think or say that I am, be so secure in who it is that I am in that moment of self-expression that I can begin to tolerate a bit more whatever the other person is thinking, feeling, or doing as a result of what I'm saying.
Yeah. And thinking to give yourself a little grace too, right? You say that you're still working on wanting to be liked. And so we're thinking as humans, I think we're all designed to be, or wired to an extent, to care what other people think. I think one thing that we can do is be a little bit more intentional and care what the right people think. And when you were just speaking, a word that came to mind was boundaries, right? And being able to maybe take pleasure in saying the word no. And it's interesting, when I started leaning into that, I was being more authentic because I wasn't saying yes to things that were no longer in alignment. And when I used to do that, it would just build up resentment. I didn't want to be there, whatever the case may be. And now it's like, as you really own your power and protect your energy, I should say, you're not going to please everyone. It's like the opposite of a people pleaser, especially when you start, you look, no. And I know I didn't make this up. People have said no is a complete sentence. But do you still struggle at times with disappointing, and I'm putting in quotations, thinking that you might be disappointing someone, but you still need to prioritize and protect your own energy? Do you still struggle with that at times?
I want to even just touch on the wisdom that you were sharing in terms of being wired,
yeah, right,
to be connected to others. And I think going hand in hand with that is not to disappoint, to be liked, to maintain, right, those connections that we do intrinsically need. And my site research actually in How to Be Love You Seek, that social exclusion actually activates the pain center of our brain. It's not only emotionally painful to think, imagine, or to actually be separate from or ostracized from our group or disappointing another to the extent that they are now shifting the relationship with us, it's actually physically painful for us. So to speak to that point, there are absolutely moments where, you know, honoring myself, whether it's kind of my physical needs and what my current life looks like. I think about this a lot in terms, and I have this opportunity to say no a lot of times in my now personal relationships. I wake up very early, which means I go to sleep very early at night. So any, you know, engagements or offerings that very well-meaning friends want to do with me at nighttime, I often am met with or the opportunity to say no. It's not that I don't value this relationship. It's that my physical body, I need to honor what my schedule, the schedule that works for me. So that looks like, you know, when I'm even hanging out personally with people, it's, do you want to have breakfast? Do you want to have an early lunch or an early dinner? I'd love to see you. Though anything after a certain point in the night, I have the opportunity to say nothing about my relationship with you. I value it a lot, though that won't work for me. And then even more difficult is beautiful professional opportunities that I'm given on the near regular basis now, right? And for whatever reason, if they don't feel aligned, if they don't work with my schedule, if I'm already overtaxed with whatever it is that I'm doing, as much as I may want to say yes, there is a big part of me that knows now I need to say no. I need to honor my physical limitations, my emotional limitations, and stand in the security of the right people. Personally or professionally, will create space for that no to be okay. And the other people, right, who I was trying to present myself in a particular way, and, you know, they needed that yes for this presentation or for what I was going to offer them in that moment, then those relationships naturally begin to separate.
So good. Unbelievable, actually. Is there anybody in your life that has a hall pass for those boundaries?
No, not even my partners. And that's one of the things, the more difficult relationships is to continue to acknowledge for myself in daily ways, being, you know, not only a people pleaser, but coming from a family that very much operated like a unit. We ate at the same time. We thought the same things. We shared those cycles of anxiety together. We had what is, you know, kind of known or typically as a codependent or a meshed boundaryless relationships. Again, I was able to maintain those very superficial connections within my family. So that translates to a continued difficulty for me to operate as a separate individual when the people that with whom I'm sharing my life, my even home with, are, you know, needing something different in any given moment. Though I have the awareness now, I might not always actualize on the choice to, you know, live in those boundaries. Though in my opinion, this isn't to say though that there isn't a natural give and take or a negotiation. And I talk about in this new book that goes along, or an energetic exchange where, right, I might be pushing, you know, if it's not a primary need in a given moment, I might in some moments show up in physical service of a partner or an emotional service, right? Supporting them if they're going through something, right? In again, within reason, if I have the resources to do that. Though at this point, knowing that I've developed enough of a relationship pattern with those individuals, that knowing that I will be on the receiving end of the support at some other time. So that's not necessarily a conversation that when it really comes down to my boundaries, this point, no one has a hall pass. I am the decider of, and hopefully I make more choices than not to say and to honor the boundaries and the needs that I'm having in any given moment, because I now understand that what for so long felt like service to others, showing up, surpassing my need, just being there and saying yes if something was requested of me, actually wasn't coming from a grounded service place. It was coming from my intention or attempt, I should say, at managing perceptions, at keeping relationships intact, and wasn't actually coming from what I believe is the aligned state, just to use language that we keep coming back to because it beautifully applies, that service actually comes from. So really simply, if I'm not making sure that I'm cared for, then, right, that analogy, then if I'm not putting that oxygen mask on myself, then I'm not actually going to be of service to anyone else around me at any time.
It's so fun. I relate to you on a very, very deep level. This is really incredible. Like high, like dopamine hit, talking to you. That analogy with the oxygen mask, I only recently understood after all these
years. Same.
Like why it makes sense. And I'm the same way in regards to wake up early and going to bed early. And it's interesting because in the industry, I guess is the right word, I'm in now, there's a lot of events, networking and stuff like that, that typically start 7, 8 o'clock. And it's like, I often find myself like at this, like, you know, why can't it start at 5? I'm just curious, if what time, you don't want me asking, do you go to bed and wake up?
I'm waiting, Craig. I'm holding the vision of a day when we have matinee experiences. Like, what's so wrong with a matinee? I'm usually up by 5 a.m. I mean, 7 p.m. I'm getting ready to wind down. I'm in my pajamas. I'm usually in bed. Sometimes I might even be asleep by 8 p.m. On any given night. So that to me means dinner time is usually around 5 p.m. I'm the early bird special person, though. And again, I make jokes because for a very long time, I would try so hard. I would buy tickets to things in the evening and then I would end up, the day would come and I would never go see the movie or see the show because it just would start too late and I would just be too tired. And again, I see that now in my relationships. My friendships know that, you know, we're going to see each other in the morning time. We're going to have an earlier dinner. I very much value my relationships, though. Again, I can't compromise. So that often is saying no to events that are evening based events.
Yeah. How do you disconnect so beautifully? I imagine it was a little bit of a process for me. I could, if I'm being honest and vulnerable, I could do a better job of shutting it off. And even my fiance sometimes she'll be like, Craig, can we talk about something else and just throw on something where we don't have to use our brains? And she'll want to throw on like The Office or one of her favorite TV shows. Because I just love this stuff so much. Like this conversation, I can't get enough of it. And obviously our brand is growing very rapidly. And I just love this stuff. But I need to be better at disconnecting. Maybe you have any tips?
Yeah. So for me, again, interestingly, because my habitual coping go-to was to disconnect, right? To zone out, to numb, to just be far away on my spaceship where I'm not necessarily even thinking about anything. My mind is more just blank, though I'm physically there, disconnecting. And this is something that I'm interested in. I'm happy that we kind of are going down this path because oftentimes I get asked, well, is it not appropriate? Should I never disconnect, right? Especially if you have that habitual habit. My opinion is always when choices are made from that empowered conscious state that we began to talk about, I still disconnect. So saying that to say, disconnecting is not necessarily difficult for me. I find myself, again, I will schedule opportunities like this, conversations, you know, creation, whatever it is that I'm working on. After, of course, I set aside, which is a difficult thing for me to do each and every morning, creating morning time for me, because I know that endless to-do list. I know what it is to achieve. I'm excited even about what it is I have to do that day, or I want to dive into it right away to get it done, right? This whole habitual overachieving self that I have, I'm met with from the time I wake up, from the moment I wake up in the morning. So it's that commitment to say, yes, Nicole, I know that you have all of those things to do. You might want to do many of those things. You might want to just do them to get them over with. Though to make sure that you're showing up in alignment and in flow, it is so important for you to stay committed to caring for your body in the morning. So saying that to say, I then stack all of this enjoyable, creative activity. And I do find myself naturally coming to an end of like energy. And so for me, kind of putting on some fun television, you know, around dinner time or after dinner time is natural. I think, Joe, in general, for those of us who struggle to do that or who are always interested and want to learn, or maybe we've learned to, right, separate ourselves from deeper stuff that could come up if we're just having that moment of disconnection, becoming aware will then let you, it might not mean that you're not still compelled to put on that really interesting 2-hour YouTube and learn something, though you might more often than not begin to make the choice to, like your fiance is saying, right, put on something fun or do something different, more fun in presence, or disconnect it in a more casual way than in a learning or kind of energy driven way. But I think it's important to understand that these habits don't go away, nor are they necessarily problematic. Like I said, I still have a lot of moments of veg time on the couch. What is different is I'm choosing to do it, and I could just as easily choose not to. And I also now have the tools to navigate what might be coming up emotionally when I'm doing it. I'm not just doing it because it's my body's way of saying, oh, there's too much going on under there. I'm just going to zone out for a few minutes.
You talk about your body a lot. No, it's really important to you. how important to you is a fitness routine?
For me, and again, fitness is something that while I've been a lifelong athlete, I played softball throughout college. So I've always, you know, had movement and much more athletically driven fitness, for lack of a better word, in my life. I discovered post college that while I liked the idea of the byproducts of fitness, and I lived in New York City, so I walked around a lot, and I liked this idea, right? Of I had a lot of body image things from my own childhood, right? So I wanted to be fit, so my body is fit. The reality of it is I didn't like a traditional kind of gym-based fitness. I didn't like rigorous activity. And this even goes back to my inability to deal with discomfort. I learned if there was any discomfort in my body, if when I was doing cardio, my heart rate got too hot, elevated, for me, it mimicked too many of the panic attacks that I had in my past. I didn't know how to calm my body down. So before long, I stopped that version of that vigorous activity. So saying that to say, again, I had to redefine fitness in my life. And for me, what I've gained benefit from is consistent, of course, because I did understand how important movement is, how for me, how, again, going back to energetics, my body had accumulated so much energy from all of the stress, all of the emotions that I hadn't dealt with for so long. So I understood that awareness piece, that movement and stretching and learning how to tolerate the discomfort that, you know, is now inevitably present in my very tight muscles was going to be part of my body's way to heal. So the consistency of the practice was important, though. For me, it was building in manageable ways to be in a fitness routine. So saying that to say, it's very important. It's foundational, though it doesn't look like an hour and a half at doing vigorous activity. Many mornings, it looks like doing yoga or Pilates. I have a treadmill here. I walk around my neighborhood. I do things, again, that feel approachable and doable on that near daily basis. And on the days where I don't do it for whatever reason, because I dive right into work, because I choose not to for any other reason, because I'm traveling and I find it difficult sometimes to maintain my movement routine all of the times when I'm traveling and podcasting and doing all the things, I grant myself grace and I stay committed to giving myself the opportunity to making that decision to move my body that next day.
Yeah, this is so good. This is such a beautiful divine connection. I'm so proud of you. Like, I don't know what the future holds per se, but right now you are a gladiator in the perfect arena. I mean, you're so jazzed, you're so knowledgeable, you're so well spoken. It's just fun to watch. And this is totally off the cuff, if you're up for it. For our listeners, I imagine you're enjoying the conversation, and I encourage you all to grab her book. Whoever gets the best nugget from this conversation right now, take a screenshot of the episode, story it, tag both of us, and we'll each send you the best one, just one, a signed copy of both our new books.
Love it. Absolutely.
Short answer, and I know you could probably talk about this a lot, but who is this book for?
Anyone. In my opinion, we're all in a relationship, whether it's with ourselves or other people. I want to emphasize this is not just for us who are those of us who are in a committed romantic type relationship. We are all relating to someone at some time.
Yeah, that's the best answer ever. And that's why the work is so important. It's applicable and universal for everybody in some capacity.
Yes. Yes. And I think this is why to my community, since I made that commitment to be myself, much like your own. There is so much divine alignment here, Craig, between you and I. I made that commitment. The Instagram space was where I practiced daily showing up, sharing myself in this way that I had personally learned not to. Professionally, I was told not to be a human, not to share my own struggles. Yeah. For me, you know, the challenge of doing that and staying committed to doing that was really affirmed by how universal these, you know, the community began to grow. It wasn't just people in Philadelphia where I was living. They were quite literally from around the world and helping heal me by hearing so much similarity reflected back in their own journeys from my own was so incredibly healing. And again, it really emphasized to me, while we might live in different places, we might look different, we might believe different things, at our core, we are so much more similar than we are dissimilar.
Yeah. And I encourage everyone to check out her community immediately following this conversation. And you don't have, there's a big difference, in my opinion, between an audience and a community. An audience can be like metrics and fake followers. Your community is so engaging. It's so special to witness. And it's just a beautiful thing. I would typically ask, what are you most excited about right now? But I think we know the answer to that. what's the best way for our whole community to support you? Is there a specific place they can grab the book? Are there bonuses? What's the best way?
I appreciate that. Yeah. And the community, like I said, is just such a, the community has given me the gift of this opportunity to write books, to be in service in this way. So I am just so grateful. I'm so grateful for your community, for you opening your community up, and for all of you who are listening to this conversation. As far as books go, wherever you prefer to buy your book, is a great place for you to buy the book. I do have a website up, How to Be the Love You Seek, with some book retailers highlighted on there, though really it is your choice in terms of whatever is accessible. And saying that to then say again, the community. I'm so prioritizing free resources, growing, not only talking about these concepts, giving the daily tools for those of you who choose or don't have the, you know, finances or the resources to purchase the book. I still, these conversations are needed. And then speak to the point, there's a beautiful community now growing across all of the social media platforms. Of course, it all began on that Instagram account, the.holistic.psychologist. Though, however it is that you consume content, you can type that in the handle or in the search bar and find a beautiful, beautiful community of individuals who are having these conversations open and vulnerably and are on this same journey.
So proud of you. This is unbelievable. Hang out for one second. I want to connect to you after. Dr. Nicole, I want you to know the definition of authenticity, curiosity, and a beautiful resonance. I can personally guarantee your best is yet to come. Keep on spreading your wings and leaving your mark on this world. So much love and respect for you. Thank you so much for stopping by and dropping these priceless, juicy nuggets today.
Thank you, Craig, so much. It was an honor to be here and to have this conversation with you.
I could talk to you all day.
I know. I'm just getting started.
Same, if I'm being honest. That was unbelievable. I would love to stay connected and hopefully do
absolutely
more things.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you again. It's felt very personally, like you're having the experience resonant, and I'm very grateful, like I said, for the opportunity to get this work in front of your community now.
Yeah. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, and follow me on Instagram at @CraigSiegel_CLS, the YouTube channel Craig Siegel, and our website, CultivateLastingSymphony.com, where you could sign up for our email blast with all free trainings on all of our content. The best is yet to come.